Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate. It's time for our monthly look at the Healing Muse, the Journal of Literary and Visual Arts produced by Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. And Dr. Deirdre Nealon, editor of the Healing Muse, joins us this morning. Good morning, Dr. Nealon.
Good morning, Tricia.
Welcome back. It's always good to have you here. And I think particularly this time of year, we've got some nice pieces to talk about this morning.
We do. We have pieces that are filled with spring's possibilities.
We do. And, you know, just let's take a moment, because if people have their copy of The Healing Muse, they're going to want to pull it out. For those who don't know what it is, let's explain what their journal is, or what this literary journal is.
This literary journal contains poetry, memoirs, fiction, essays, and artwork, all loosely designed around the theme of medicine, illness, the body, healing.
And healing. And the healing part of it, I think, is fascinating, because not all these pieces are particularly hopeful, but they all do seem to revolve around a positive, having to do with maybe people who are sick, but they're looking for the positive side of it.
Yes. Writing is not obviously a cure-all, but I think that we can write our way into bad news and write our way out of bad news.
It's that whole tie between our mental health and our physical health, isn't it?
Yes.
All right, so we've got two pieces of poetry this morning. You'd never really know by their titles that they have anything to do with this winter to spring transition, but they do.
But they do.
They
so,
do.
So let's start with Needle Stick.
All right.
Which is written by Lori Dill, who's a physician down in Alabama. She works with AIDS patients.
She does. All right. If you will, read it to us.
I would love to. Needle Stick. In the dead of winter splits wide that chasm, that canyon, dividing what we know by numbers from the firestorm of the heart. The strain of simply standing still, perched high on a precipice, battling vertigo, and waiting, waiting, while the careless gods play games with health, fate, and late lab results. Waiting until the unadorned verdict drifts down, confirming that for no apparent reason this time, lightning struck somewhere else. And I realize suddenly that during the long, breathless interval, spring has already come, has danced past sprightly yellow daffodils, and the first pink blush of redbuds is dancing into the gracious whiteness of dogwood blossoms, the exuberant fuchsia of azaleas.
So there you go.
Yeah.
It's this says to me, and this is something that absolutely drives me nuts, and that is waiting.
Yes.
Waiting and waiting, that limbo of not having an answer that you're expecting.
Exactly. I mean, this is the part of medicine that does drive all of us crazy, and it drives the physicians and nurses crazy too. But you have to wait for lab results. And Lori Dill starts us off with Needle Stick, and those people who have been ill or taken care of people, you know, you do your Needle Sticks, and then you wait for the lab to tell you if it's good news or bad news. So in this poem, yes, the speaker waits. And it's a terrible time, she says, as the careless gods play games. That's what it feels like. Like, you know, why can't they turn around and give me these results
absolutely,
2 seconds afterwards?
Absolutely true. And, you know, I think if they could, they would.
Yes, I think
you know,
they would too.
I don't think that we have the lab people who are just holding up results to play God, which is
right.
What it sounds like patients think is happening.
Right.
And, you know, I think if you're in that very frustrating position, that's kind of how it feels.
It does feel that way. And what's nice about this poem reminds us that your life is happening even while you're waiting for the lab results. So why not jump into your life? As she says, spring is everywhere. She sees those colors. It started without her.
That's
almost
right.
Because she's waiting.
Because she's not paying attention.
Exactly.
She's doing this other. You know, there's a bigger theme in a lot of the writing and the speaking I do. I find people who have been diagnosed. And then one of the things is that their diagnosis, they begin to let it define who they are.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you have someone who is diagnosed with diabetes, and they no longer say, I'm a 57-year-old man. Now they say, I'm a diabetic. They let it define them. And doesn't that also happen with this kind of thing? We let that worry about what the results are going to be ruin or take over our lives.
Yeah, you know, you're bringing up a really good point, because we do that in medical training now too, that we're trying to get the students away from the idea of talking about the diabetic in room 42.
Sure.
Which is how we used to talk about that, instead of saying it's Mr. So-and-so in room 42. So
yeah.
You don't want to become the diagnosis. The diagnosis is obviously a new and important part of your identity, but it's not the totality of your identity.
Exactly right. Just like you would manage anything else in your life, you learn to manage some of these things, and this needle prick is part of the management.
Exactly.
It's not who you are.
It's not who you are, and spring is going to come.
Yeah, regardless of whether you've had a needle stick or not. All right, we have a second piece.
Yes, we do. We have a second piece, and if you have your books with you, on page 89, it's called If I Could Help. And this is by Rae Spencer, R-A-E Spencer, and she is a veterinarian in Virginia, I believe.
She's a veterinarian.
Yeah, so we get lots of people writing about lots of different things. But this one also has a little spring theme in it. It's called If I Could Help. I would, if I could, tuck a yellow rose root between fall and summer and call it winter, with the understanding that it is alive and needs only dirt, water, and sun to sprout full into spring. I would, if it might help, bring you a click beetle to leap from your hand with a hard shell snap, or teach your thumb wisdom with which to recognize opossum and raccoon from only their tracks in the mud. I could find the robin's cup nest, three blue eggs rocking, and make you watch as the eggs turn into chicks, or show you a forest where bark-peeled trees carry bear messages in a thin stream of sap. You might find a velvet cuff from the stag's new antler, or last year's gnawed discard marked by the fox, the sly bone-eater. Come with me. I'll show you these things, and dig a yellow rose root to tuck into your hand. We will name it winter, and you will stay until spring to see it sprout, to understand that it is alive, and so are you.
Ah, so.
Nice, huh?
It is. It is. And I had to give this one some thought because I really saw a lot of dimensions to it. Yellow rose root. At first, I was thinking it sounded like an herbal medicine that I might pick up somewhere.
Yeah, and crush into a powder.
Sure, or whatever it would be. And then I realized she was really just talking about a yellow rose, the root of that yellow rose. And I got thinking, what would that look like? And it doesn't look like it's alive.
No, it doesn't.
It looks like it's dead.
Yes.
As do a lot of these other things that she talks about in the piece.
Yeah, exactly. And in this poem, the speaker is talking to someone else and trying to make them want to believe what she does, which is, yes, we have to go through winter, excuse me, and perhaps a diagnosis has been given and winter feels like that. That's all there is. But she insists that if you come with her, she will show you all during the winter, things live in the forest, antlers get discarded, bears are scratching trees, there's things all around, and she promises, you know, if you stay with me, we will see the spring together.
Yes, it's like there's still a lot of life. No matter what it looks like, there's still a lot of life. And let me go back to what I was saying earlier about when you get a diagnosis. A diagnosis is not a death sentence, even if it may result in that.
Yes.
You still have a lot of living to do in the interim.
Exactly. And, you know, this is the part that I think must be overwhelming to people who receive that initial diagnosis. But what we know from life and being with people who get these is, yeah, we pick ourselves up again. It's like, yes, you get that terrible news, and then you figure out how you're going to live through it.
You know, I've gotten that terrible news, and I can tell you that you go through a period where you are so stunned that there's not life going on. There's just being stunned. You can't process. You can't think. You can't enjoy. You can't be angry. You can't do any of those things. And I think that that is a part of what she's talking about here. It's like, okay, you're getting past that part of it. Now let me hold your hand and show you that you're still alive.
Yes.
And there's still a lot going on. I also heard a little bit of Shakespeare in there. You know, the rose by any other name still smells as sweet.
Exactly.
All right, a rose root, as ugly and dead as it might look, is still alive.
It's still alive, and it has the promise of gorgeous beauty coming to us.
It does. It does. You know, it's interesting to me. I know that you request submissions for the Healing Muse.
Yes.
And you like people to send you pieces. Will you tell us very quickly what you look for? Because now you'll have another edition coming out in the fall, right?
Yeah, we will have another one. It'll be our 10th anniversary, and we're still open until May 1st to receive people's work. So if you go to our website at www.healingmuse.org, you'll find all the information about word length, etc. But we're looking for what you're hearing when you and I talk. People write something and it gets us thinking about spring, living, roses in a different way. So we're looking for an ordinary story that gives us an extraordinary moment.
I love that. It's metaphorical in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Totally, yeah.
Looking for everyday experiences that represent bigger concepts, bigger things. I also have to comment that what I love is that we have pieces here that are not necessarily by literary masters. You have pieces in the Healing Muse that are written by students, medical students,
right.
Patients.
Right, nurses, patients.
Caregivers.
Everybody. No one can go through the experiences that we're talking about in this book without needing to reflect upon them. And some people do it through their painting, their photography. Some people do it through words. Some people do it, obviously, other ways. They run marathons afterwards,
sure they do.
Whatever. But in The Healing Muse, I think you will see people who didn't feel called to be writers necessarily, but having gone through this kind of experience, they put down, they feel better after
yes.
having done it. And I know I always feel better after reading them.
It's very cathartic.
Yeah.
It's very
yeah.
cathartic. Well, Dr. Deirdre Nealon from the Center for Bioethics and Humanities at Upstate, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Good couple of pieces this morning, certainly an appropriate time of the year.
Yes, happy spring, everyone.
We'll look forward to your return next month, too. Listeners, we're going to take a quick break. Please do stay with us. This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.